Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's hear it for the boys, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Bournemouth got a great win at Chelsea. Manchester City gubbed Arsenal. And Big Dunk hugged everybody again.
Got that wrong. He didn't hug everybody.
I was about to say, Moise Kean's not in agreement for that.
Uh-huh. Very much unhugged.
Hugless.
We'll come to that later. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me, Marcus Bell, to introduce Luke Moore, Pete Donaldson, Jim Campbell.
All right.
Hello.
The old classic lineup.
What a fabulous four.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, have you had a nice time of late?
What?
Christmas is nearly there.
You're joining us from the Ramble drawing room, if you're wondering.
As ever, with me, I won't speak on behalf of Pete and Jim.
Right.
You know, life's been a mixed bag.
Yes. I had a heavy Black Friday and my lungs hurt because of my asthma. But
First thing Pete said when he came in today, he said, my asthma's playing up. And he sounded about 80.
Yeah. Mm.
So,
and my credit
card's opened
screaming.
A can of worms here, Marcus.
Oh, dear.
What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Still good lad.
Recovering slightly from the Ramble Christmas dinner we had over the weekend.
Very fun. Soggy.
Four courses.
Four courses of cheese.
Indulgent. Yeah. Very indulgent.
There we go.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. They were very indulgent in the away end at Bournemouth, weren't they? Getting one more goal than Chelsea.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Dan Gosling with a late looper.
Didn't even follow in. Didn't need to.
It was a looper, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was.
And a late looper. What a pleasing phrase.
It's the sort of goal you saw being scored every single week in the Premier League in the 90s. Do our keepers be like, just out of position, confused as to what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
Lovely.
It was a lovely improvised finish.
Mm. It really was. And it's interesting. This might be the first... I feel like this might be a turning point for the VAR celebration, because once it was given, they just erupted as if it had gone in that moment. So,
I think that
a good thing, maybe?
Well, the difference was, Jim, is that they thought it was offside. So the goal was gone, like immediately after. I think that's it, isn't it, with VAR? It's that time period of celebrating. Mm. And then you think, oh no, have we scored? And that's what people get annoyed about, I think. Mainly, well, other reasons, but that's one of the big ones. Whereas, of course, Gosling and Co., as Bournemouth are now known, they thought, that's no goal. So back to the halfway line.
I think he knew he was onside, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he accepted the decision straight away.
When a player's going to do that kind of like wobbly hand thing,
when they know they should
do
that.
When they know they should do that, and then it gets chopped off, they're like, no, we've embarrassed ourselves.
I think the sad thing about it is that will be used as a reason why VAR is good.
It's
like, in that very sort of narrow set of parameters, it's a good thing. Right?
They should.
It works. But elsewhere, it's still a bit of a shit show.
When VAR's happening, they should wheel us. You know those flamethrowers they have at Chelsea?
Yeah. Yeah, they do have those, yeah.
Just wheel them on, just while VAR's happening, and then wheel them off again.
Can I also say, in terms of VAR, when it comes to an offside decision or two, I don't think we need to see the guy with the pen doing the set squares.
Yeah, I don't think we need the pageantry of it at all.
I don't think we need it to turn football into a kind of like a shit Tron.
Indeed.
Mm. Well, Bournemouth fans
Tron's
will be
already a shit Tron.
They will be grateful. Absolutely. Really? It was one of those decisions that we've seen in the past over and over again when defenders are coming out quickly, mm-hmm. forwards are attacking it, and the exact crossover point is when the flag needs to go up.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for an assistant referee to see that, so it worked pretty well. But I mean, Bournemouth have been in absolutely terrible form, as we said on Friday, largely fueled by the fact they've got so many injuries.
Yeah,
Chelsea are, you never really know what you're going to get with them, and so it was a surprising result on one hand, but on the other hand, you could kind of see it coming.
Absolutely. Well, Bournemouth has lost 5 in a row since beating Manchester United on the 2nd of November, and so I suppose you wouldn't have predicted that. But then Chelsea have been in poor form as well. 4 of their last 5 they've lost in the league. They lost at home to West Ham. Slightly concerning signs. Obviously, they had a good start to the season, all things considered, old Chelsea. But Jim, you know, they've lost again at home to a side that they should really be beating.
Yeah, they should really have been beating them. And it was a very sort of limp, flat performance, wasn't it? But I suppose, you know, the rough side of what comes with having all these exciting young players come through at once is that they're all young and they are relatively inexperienced. I know, I suppose, Tammy Abraham has played a lot of games and Mason Mount has as well, but at a lower level for the most part. So there are going to be times where, you know, that inexperience shows.
And but they have a bit of experience in that side, though. You've highlighted those two, but in the back line and the midfield and all.
Yeah, but the blend isn't exactly right, is it? Clearly it isn't, otherwise they wouldn't be losing weird games here and there like this. And also, I mean, I suppose you can't really apply this to individual teams, but it does seem a bit of an odd season across the board, apart from the very top and the very bottom of the league this season.
Yeah,
apart from Liverpool, really. Patchy teams. Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, no, but you could even say that's odd in the sense that they've been so bloody good.
Yes, true.
Like they haven't lost a game. Yeah.
I mean, I feel sorry for Chelsea fans having to watch Willian just smack a corner into the first man over and over again.
I feel like everyone who takes a corner in the Premier League does that. Like beating the first man seems to be the hardest thing
nowadays,
in football.
Yeah, but nowadays corners are so whippy, aren't they? Like, yeah. And they have to be lower, and you can't just loop them in because just to keep ball, grab them or.
Willian took 7 corners. I reckon all of them hit the first man. Christian Eriksen used to be terrible for it as well.
I still think the lofted corner has a place. There has to be a little zone, a perfect little bit where it's too far for the keeper to come, but it's close enough for a powering.
I was massive of that opinion as well, and I chatted to someone on Ramble Meets, and I forget who it was now. It was a while back, and they seemed to intimate that if you float one in, really wherever, the keepers are so good they just come and get them.
Really,
they're so no kind of pace on the ball at all. So it's about the penalty spot. The keepers will just
And if the keeper comes out,
you might just play it short.
And if the keeper comes out and he gets impeded, like he's going to win, isn't he? When it comes to any referee decision. Mm-hmm. So if he gets impeded and he goes down, then
I don't know. I think you could entice him.
What are you doing?
I think you could entice.
How are you taking a corner? If I put one there for you now,
scoop.
How are you taking it?
A big fat man scoop.
Shoot top corner.
the correct answer is if you are having a peak Marcus Speller taking your corners, you're an absolute mug because he is a fox in the box.
Yeah, I appreciate
that. Why is he on corners? Harry Kane of England, rubbish.
You've got to play it low though. You're what, 4'11"?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, still beat you in the edge.
We're one of the
I saw a picture of Kelly Jones of the Stereophonics with Anthony Joshua, the boxer. And I've probably got 2 inches on Kelly Jones, and I reckon. So I always, whenever I see Kelly Jones with another celebrity, I think that's how tall I would look next to them. Anthony Joshua could wear me like a backpack, and if that isn't a dream, I want Anthony Joshua to wear me like a backpack.
Joshua seems like such a nice man, and I can't marry that up with the fact that he hits people for a living.
Uh-huh. Just business.
He's 6'6".
Big boy. And in the pocket of the
right,
Saudis.
The dawn pieces.
Yeah, well, I going back to Chelsea. All right, no.
Seriously, fuck them.
All right.
They
then.
Can't be asked to defend a looper like Dan Gosling's goal.
They can't be Eddie Howe's Bournemouth at home.
Well, they were so close to getting the trap right, weren't they?
They were.
But close is not good enough with VAR, you see. No. You have to actually do it now.
Yeah,
Lampard's holding us all to account.
Lampard's, I mean, if you do really want me to go back to the game, Lampard's.
Not necessarily.
Okay, well, won't I? I was just going to say, Lampard said after the game he seemed pretty pissed off.
Yes. Well, he is. I think he's. John.
I was just going to say, he said up until now, I think a lot of it is we're not taking enough chances because we're creating a lot, but we're giving away some silly goals. And today wasn't even we're creating a load of chances day.
Yeah. I mean, he said after the game, didn't he? I forget what was put to him by in the post match. He said, well, that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is we just got it wrong. Mm. And I like his frankness. Yeah. You know, maybe it's nominative determinism in action. But I'm enjoying the way that he's wearing his heart on his sleeve a little bit. If Chelsea lose, he's quite open about what's annoyed him about what's wrong in that performance.
Is he wearing those errors like a backpack? Very much like Anthony Joshua would wear like, Pete as a backpack.
more like a gilet. It's far more visible.
Oh, don't bring him into it.
Are we seeing a mini
Solskjaer?
Well, we are seeing a mini. No. Are we seeing a mini Solskjaer? No. Are we seeing?
It's the honeymoon over, is what I'm saying.
It's the first sort of mini crisis of Lampard's Chelsea reign, and he's obviously loved there. And I think they could probably finish 10th or 11th, and people wouldn't care too much in his first season in charge. But it will be something to keep an eye on over the next few weeks, because it's a busy Christmas period, as we all know. They've lost 4 out of their 5, as you've already mentioned, Marcus. If they go and only win, you know, pick up a couple of points over the Christmas period, they could find themselves mid-table fairly quickly, and then that'll be a completely different challenge for him.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they finished outside, say, the top 7, which I know is obviously Chelsea fans are going, well, 7th, but you know.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. The funny thing is that they've lost all these games. They're still 4th.
Yeah.
But they're still in there. They're still 3 points above
6 games.
Yeah, but Spurs have won 4 out of their last 5 in the league, and Chelsea have lost 4 out of their last 5 in the league, and Chelsea are 3 points above them. Spurs are a 5th, I believe. So that shows you how many teams are underperforming, as was it you, Jim, that said earlier. It is a bit of an odd season.
No one's lost more games in the top half than Chelsea.
Yeah.
So it tells us.
But I wonder with Lampard, because when he's managing Derby in the Championship, which is obviously all we've got to go on as him as a manager, before this season, you know what it's like? What is it, 46 games or something in the Championship? You know, the games come thick and fast. To prep every game is very difficult in the Championship. Obviously, they do prep the games, but to go into sort of great detail and so on, I think motivation is a huge thing, having the right squad and so on and so forth. They were close to being promoted. In the Premier League, every game you do need to prep for a bit more, because the teams that, and the managers and whatnot you're coming up against are so good. And if you look at Chelsea, you know, they went to Man City and kept the ball more than Manchester City did, which is absolutely incredible. I know they lost the game, but still, that is the champions of England you're talking about.
Well, it's like Troy Deeney said before the weekend. He was asked ahead of the Watford game against Liverpool. He said, people need to get real. The Premier League will find you out.
Yeah.
If you're not quite on it, you will be found out over and over again, and that's what's happened to us. That's what Deeney said.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it will happen to any team in the Premier League.
Completely.
Absolutely.
And I just wonder with Lampard, it's kind of trying to manage how to play against teams who are going to go to Stamford Bridge and go, right, let's be all the usual things. Let's be solid. Let's play, you know, maybe 2 banks of 4, or let's blah, 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 blah. How are they going to sort of start to unpick that? Because West Ham have gone there and Bournemouth have gone there, and Chelsea didn't create that much against those teams. And it almost gives other teams a blueprint to know what to do. And Lampard is going to have to try and unpick
that. Also can't stop conceding.
Well, that's a problem.
It's also a particular problem that they seem to be so vulnerable at home, because, you know, really, Abramovich is Chelsea. That whole era has been built on Stamford Bridge being a fortress and a really, really difficult place to go and get anything, even when Chelsea themselves have been in kind of hairy moments. But they look so vulnerable there this season.
Yeah, I think Stamford Bridge has probably not been the fortress it was years ago for a little while.
No, but I mean, particularly so now, it seems to feel that way.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? When weaker sides go there and get a win, not just a point, a win. I mean, Leicester should have won there. Sheffield United got a point early on in the season, and they would have, I can't remember the game actually, but they obviously got the point. And when you start looking at these things, you're no longer scared when you go there. And as I say, teams give a blueprint, but they're still in fourth.
More flames.
Get more flames.
How's the flames going during the game?
But a great win for Bournemouth, though. Vital.
Yep.
Yes.
Huge. Vital.
Huge.
Gives them a lot of encouragement down there, because, like I said, I was a bit concerned with Bournemouth with the injuries and where they've been playing. Are they going to sleepwalk towards the relegation zone? But that win there.
Well, it always happens to someone, doesn't it? They get sort of caught in the mire of a relegation scrap late on, because they've perhaps
So it could happen to Arsenal.
Well, I was about to say,
genuinely, before the West Ham game, people were talking about that. And, well, after the Man City game that we'll come on to, I'm sure they'll be talking about it again.
Yeah, well, let's move on to that game.
Good to see 60,031 people in attendance at Emirates at the weekend.
Yeah, I was laying across seven seats. So I was doing my bit.
I mean, I know Arsenal like to... You know, when it comes to propaganda, they certainly like to aid those who like to give it out. But that those figures at the Emirates, it is propaganda. Yeah. That's absolutely nonsense.
You know what they do? They've all got a history of that, haven't they? Yeah. It's ticket sold, isn't it?
No, it's they include season tickets in it. So if season ticket holders haven't turned
sold,
up, and they haven't, then that will go into it. But it's ridiculous.
Like, but I mean, presumably they can.
Isn't it a 60,000 seater stadium?
I think it's 60,000 listed out. 60,061. I don't think.
Maybe,
Who were the
maybe
third?
Maybe they're counting the players.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. you were there, Jim, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
60,260 is the capacity, and 60,031 were there.
Okay, I mean, so it was only...
No, they weren't. No, they absolutely weren't. Although, actually, that said, it was fuller than I've seen it recently.
For a bit, yeah.
Because City coming to town is a big deal, because you want to be there in case something happens, which it, of course, didn't. Now, I was expecting... I wasn't really expecting Arsenal to win. I don't think many people were, realistically. But De Bruyne scoring that goal so early on was so frustrating. Because, you know, had Martinelli put that chance away, you're thinking, oh, this is a different game. And I think that's the earliest I've ever said that in a game. I think 3 minutes in, I'm going, oh, I tell you what, he puts that one away. This could be very different. But, like, it was only seeing it back on the TV that I realised how good that finish from De Bruyne was, because you know you're just like, oh god, I can't believe this has happened so quickly. But the poise to just like to deftly sort of, you know, sweetly cushion that when the ball's in the air like that, what a player, and the last sort of player on earth that you really want in that situation. And Arsenal just sort of put in there again and again. But a big part of the problem is that before the before the second goal, Raheem Sterling's goal, there was a little bit of confusion in the box, and the defenders, Socrates and Chambers, who both had a torrid afternoon, even though Chambers have been pretty good lately in the circumstances. But like, while there seemed a little bit of uncertainty, and the crowd were going, oh, like in advance of something happening. Right, and it's got to the point now where it's
toxic,
just,
isn't it?
It really is. And it's, you know, you can't blame the crowd for being frustrated, because so much of the time those reactions are involuntary, and it is just thousands of people going, oh, this again at once, without even really, you know, not planning to do it. And at the same time, if you're a player, of course that's going to translate to you. So it's, you know, there needs to be a big change, and it's going to take a hell of a team to turn that atmosphere around, and I don't know where that's coming from right now.
It's a shame, because I remember the first game of the season against Burnley, I was there and they won 2-1. And there was quite a bit of optimism,
of course,
actually.
Yeah. I know it's
Danny
Ceballos played really well. No, yeah. Pepe was, you know, an unknown quantity back then.
But I can't believe how badly it's been. I understand it tailing off a bit and it being a little bit drab and it not being great. And, oh, blimey, are we probably going to finish sort of fifth, maybe sixth? It's kind of like, I mean, as Luke said last week, it is rotten.
It is.
Yeah. Rotten,
I mean,
to,
I
the
mean,
core.
The really frustrating thing is that Man City, I mean, Pep Guardiola said after the game that City played better against Man United. And they did, because they didn't really have to even play against Arsenal. They just let Arsenal beat themselves.
Yeah, but you know what Guardiola is doing there. He loves a bit of that.
Oh, of course he does. But, you know, what's so frustrating is that Arsenal don't even lose well anymore.
Yeah.
They were so passive. They just, you know, that second half, I mean, you know, Freddie Ljungberg said after the game that, you know, he felt the players acquitted themselves well in the second half. It's like, oh, did they?
But Man City really didn't need to try. The game was over.
They had the second half off.
Absolutely. Feel, yeah. Absolutely.
Do you feel... Well, sorry or relieved for Arsenal fans in China, because, of course, they didn't get to watch the game.
Yeah, that's very, very baffling. The Chinese government put the Spurs game on instead. Hilariously.
On a serious point, I genuinely think this could be a real watershed moment for the Premier League, and I think they do need to show a little bit of leadership. Basketball had a similar situation
with the Rockets,
with the Hong Kong protests, and they fucked it. They just didn't know what to do. And if your business model is tied to a regime that just moves the goalposts when they get a bit jumpy... The contract just isn't worth the paper it's written on. Value your product, value your fans a little bit more. And everyone's suddenly apolitical when there's when you're in someone's pocket.
When you've got is it Rwanda on your sleeves?
Well, if you look at something like Bellerin in the week, where he's talking about hashtag fuck Boris and stuff, not a thing was said on their Weibo. I'm trying to get the tonal right, but
yes.
I think Weibo is microwave. Weibo
okay, right.
is the actual Twitter thing.
What Ozil said Just, I mean, basically, he's echoing the thoughts of the United Nations.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah.
So it's not, an.
Well, it was an appeal to the Islamic nations, yes, to sort of basically their silence on the Uyghur Muslims in China, yeah. and their incarceration, yep. disappearances, yep. rape, torture, yeah, all this. Yeah, Amnesty International is very clear on this. Yep. What's going on in there? And he's basically saying, my people need to step up and stop taking money over the people. And obviously, Özil has in the past allied himself with some pretty problematic individuals. But in this case, to be honest,
he's aligned himself with the United Nations, and
of a reasonable stance, could it?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but if Arsenal makes a lot of play with their relationship with minority urban Londoners, for example, mm-hmm. it's all over their PR material mm-hmm. and stuff. And if I was a young Muslim kid in London watching Arsenal, I'd be like, yeah, my club doesn't care about people like me. They care about money, and that's it. And it's get to the point where the Premier League genuinely needs to have a policy on this sort of thing.
The Premier League came out and said it. It was the views of an individual, didn't
they? Yeah, yeah. Well, Arsenal
absolute
that.
Toss.
Arsenal said that as well. That it was just the views of Mesut Özil when they stay apolitical. And as you point out, you know, they didn't say anything about Hector Bellerin. But yeah, I mean, it is Arsenal love throwing Mesut Özil under the bus. It would seem it's like I cannot. He must be so frustrated because he left the pitch very slowly when he was substituted, and people started jeering, which is exactly what happened with Granit Xhaka, and there is no way that Mesut Özil isn't aware of that.
Well, he kicked his gloves, didn't he?
He did, and that seems very, very pointed. I mean, he must, you know, there must be some joined up thinking there, and I think I don't blame him for being frustrated with the club. You know, that's like
Arsenal have got a pretty decent record of or a pretty decent history of really decent Muslim footballers, and I'm sorry, like this lack of support off the field and on the field, right? You can sort of say he's taken a huge amount of money out of the club, et cetera, and really not performing and stuff. But I think when he came off, I think there was a little bit of that in there. All right, they were down by a fair margin.
I think it comes from the top, though. If you have owners that, you know, are openly only care about money, pretty much, then you know, they're pretty much absent, then, you know, they don't care. It's not their problem. They're happy to...
China will do whatever they want to do. They'll constantly do stuff like that. So just play your game and be a force for good.
What I find on a slightly silly note is how thin-skinned some governments are.
It's very insecure.
Anyway,
on the game itself, I thought it was absolutely crazy that Arsenal think that they can play that sort of midfield and expect it to reasonably deal with the movement and the quality of Sterling, De Bruyne.
Yeah.
I mean,
to be fair, is there any combination that you can describe as that midfield with Arsenal?
Arsenal probably didn't
realise Phil Foden was going to start.
Yeah, well, no, I don't. Probably Phil Foden didn't realise Phil Foden was going to start. but you know, probably fair, but that probably says more about Arsenal's policy than anything else. But I feel like it's quite odd how, maybe I've got this wrong, Jim, you can tell me if I have, that Arsenal fans seem to expect Guendouzi to be able to do a lot more than he can do, given where he's come from and how old he is. And I think it's unrealistic to suggest that kind of midfield could perhaps deal with someone like that, particularly when they start so badly. But I don't know if there's any real incentive at Arsenal to try really hard or to work really hard or to do things. And I think it's probably, when I said the club is rotten, a couple of people chipped off on social media, which is absolutely fine. And they said, well, you have to understand, we've got a good few young players coming through, which is absolutely true. I think three of them came off the bench and maybe Martinelli started is another one. But the fact that they've got to use these players and keep throwing them into a mix-up situation where this game's already gone.
The experience they're getting is not good.
No,
it's not. Absolutely.
And then you've got a situation where as soon as someone doesn't play well or doesn't do exactly what the fans expect from them, they just get hammered.
Yeah.
And there was a big debate on the radio last week, wasn't there, with the guy from Arsenal Fan TV, and I don't propose to go into that, or whatever it's called now, AFTV. And that to me, I think it's fair to say that contributes to the situation at Arsenal because it is in their interest. Now, of course, I know their views on their channel go up when they do well, but of course, the last thing they want is for Arsenal to be okay. They want them to be brilliant or terrible because it's a commercial operation. So if Arsenal have already made moves to kind of move their name away from Arsenal so they're not associated with them, but to me, it's quite significant of the wider malaise there. Like, these people are just there to line their own pockets the same way the ownership is.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably...
And the players, probably.
Can we call it ATV?
AFTV.
Yeah, I mean... Apolitical Football Television.
I think, to be fair to them, they probably want Arsenal to be brilliant all the time. But absolutely, I think... And I wonder how much this kind of angry discourse around Arsenal, and it isn't just them, because Arsenal have their own sort of huge kind of almost private media, in a sense, across social media. I feel that translates to the fury in the stadium, because people can go home and they watch expressions of that, and it just stokes it. And I don't think it's a deliberate thing, but I think it's definitely part of the problem. It's baggage. It's absolute baggage around Arsenal. If you were looking at buying the club, you know, if KSE were looking at selling up because they've got these spiraling stadium costs for the LA Rams now, so that's, I don't know, that might be a possibility. You'd factor all this into it, you know. If the club aren't doing well, then there's a lot of
I would just,
you
know, say on,
baggage
I would just say
around
the,
it that drags it down.
I would just say on the football front, you know, if I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm going to go to that game. I don't realistically expect necessarily Arsenal to win.
No,
but I think you've got to make it hard for the other team. I think at least you can ask on your own stadium when the TV cameras are on, and you know, there's, you know, it's a capacity crowd.
Yep. Yeah,
is to make the other team actually win it from you, not let them have it so Absolutely. Easy that after half an hour, whatever it is, the game's gone.
The body language as well is so telling, and that's not just in this game. So I watched the Europa League game against Standard Liège, and when Arsenal went 1-0 down, it was Alex Lacazette who didn't play yesterday. When he took the kick off, it was like, you know when you stub your toe on a radiator and it's really annoying? So once it's like the throbbing's gone a little bit, you kick the radiator, you give it a little, that'll show you. It's like that from the kickoff. It's like, oh God.
Yeah. It's not good. And Arsenal, I just find it extraordinary that they sack Emery and they're just no plan. Absolutely no plan. And it's ridiculous.
It's bizarre.
Emmanuel Petit, former Arsenal ledge, of course, believes that Ancelotti is the perfect man.
Yeah.
Arsenal, that's absolute bullshit.
Well, I think Ancelotti comes in and calms things down and so on.
I think things are already quite calm.
Well, I was about to say, I think genuinely at the moment, they should get bloody Duncan Ferguson in.
Yeah. Anyway. We said it last week, and Carragher, I think, said it on the show on Soccer Sunday, whatever it's called, Super Sunday. I completely agree. There's no way you want Ancelotti in there. Yeah. There's no way. Mm.
I just think, though, if they may have someone lined up, because you're not going to throw them straight in against City, are you? So who knows?
But the reports this morning of Arteta is head and shoulders ahead of everyone else in the recruitment process.
If he still wants it after his front row seat yesterday.
He might well not.
Imagine that fucking shower.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the fact, actually, while we're recording, arsenal.com/staff. Staff, nothing on
staff.
There.
No,
staff.
They've sacked nothing on
everyone.
There. They've sacked everyone.
They've sacked
There's nobody on there.
What about Mustafi? Is he there? Leicester. They dropped points at home to Norwich City. Rodgers' title bid took a blow against
Norwich
the Canaries.
Had a real go.
They did.
Yeah, they're now 10 points behind Liverpool. It's going to be difficult. We've seen it before in the Premier League.
What are you doing, Norwich?
We've seen it before. Jamie Vardy didn't score either.
No, nearly.
Yeah, very nearly. It's a bit of a shame. They failed to equal a club record of 10 wins in a row. I mean, that's the thing with Leicester. 9 wins in a row is phenomenal for any
yeah,
club,
it really
to
is.
Be perfectly honest.
Well, this
with
is the frustrating thing about how good Liverpool are, isn't it? To even keep in relative touching distance with them, you have to perform to a phenomenal, phenomenal level.
And weird situation with Iheanacho, then Rodgers had to substitute off.
Yeah, what was that?
So they were supposed to give the... So Norwich put the ball out. Leicester was supposed to give it back. Iheanacho just didn't give it back.
Right.
And started to attack the Norwich goal about 25... I mean, apologies if people have already seen this, but just in case people haven't. 25 yards out, just starts trying to attack. And he has to get... they basically have to foul him to stop him having a shot on target. And then all the Norwich fans go absolutely insane. Like Todd Cantwell runs over, grabs him by the throat and all the rest of it. The referee did a pretty good job of calming it all down. And then Rodgers just substituted him off. Because I think he thought he was going to get a good shoot.
Yeah, it's
but
an odd one.
There was an absolutely bizarre conversation on, I think it was Chris Kamara, by his Christmas album now, by the way. Got absolutely no commercial vested interest in saying that, but it'd be funny.
I voted for him in the Brits long list.
Did you?
Yeah.
Good. Great.
Number one pick for me.
He seemed to, him and his guest, who I can't remember it was, seemed to be arguing that Jamie Vardy should have been given that goal. And Jackie Oatley was going... But it wasn't on target.
Yeah.
Like, no. Yeah. It should be, I mean, if you're a striker, it's Darren Bent. If you're a striker, you want to be given that.
Yeah, well, I know.
It's like, it's great.
That's not how it works.
Yeah, I'm sure Romario would like to be given it. It doesn't make it reasonable to do
Romario's
so.
Romario's going
to
claim it either way. Yeah. Need to be
that's like if you strikers lobbying group. That's what it's all about.
Goalkeeper loses, you know, a goal that was questionably given by VAR and deep into injury time. Well, I'll just probably have the clean sheet. No, you haven't.
Yeah. It's not... The other argument Darren Bent made was that, well, the goalkeeper doesn't want this record. Well, I know, but he has done it.
Yeah, I know what everybody wants in this situation. Yeah.
It was a shame for Vardy because it was. I think he hit the woodwork as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
So he came pretty close, but I mean, he's been in an amazing form.
But as PTD said, Norwich were very good. Daniel Farke thought it was their best performance of the season.
Did he say that they weren't quite top enough?
Yeah,
just keeps giving, doesn't he?
They beat Man City this season, so I mean, I'm not sure that's.
I was surprised by those comments. I suppose it's their best performance for a while going away.
100%. Maybe he's forgotten the Man City thing because it was so long ago.
Maybe he's tried to, because that was the catalyst for their losing run.
He's got a hope that it's not like going to cast a big shadow over the Christmas period.
Indeed.
Although he got that point.
He probably casts a big shadow, doesn't he, old Daniel?
Only Marco Silva's Everton have been charitable enough to give Norwich a win since that Man City.
So Leicester have actually got Man City and Liverpool coming up, haven't they, over this very Christmas busy period.
Yeah. Dilly ding, dilly dong.
Yes. Yeah, so. Well, that's a shame for them why they drop points. Is because
exactly.
Marcus, Liverpool are miles away.
What I'm saying is for them, if they go into the Liverpool game and they were still 8 points and you think the win would take them to 5, that is much more kind of enticing, I suppose. Bearing in mind they should have drawn the game at least. They should have drawn the game at Liverpool.
But you're right. They do now have a riled up Jamie Vardy, which is a great thing.
Ooh. You're right, Peter. It's nearly gone.
Yeah.
But who knows? Nearly gone. Nearly.
Yeah. All right then, ladies and gentlemen. We'll have a quick break and then we'll talk more about football, I think.
All right then.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble Daily. Now, without further ado, it's time for emails with PTD.
Yeah, it is.
You email show at footballrambledaily.com. And now Peter's reading it out. Well done.
Christmas number one. Hello to Danny Fitzpatrick. Fellas, I have to disagree with your suggestion of Roy Hodgson for the car map. Of all the voices in football that would be suitable for reading you a bedtime story, surely Big Steve Bruce has to be top of the list.
Does anyone call a sat nav a car map?
That's what I thought.
It took me a while to work out what you meant.
Same, yeah. Oh, calm app. Right,
oh,
okay.
Calm app. Well, I thought it was a car map.
Calm app.
Did you?
Do you mean like a sat nav? Still has a voice, I guess.
That's like the last thing you want is a sat nav voice putting you to sleep.
Yeah. Look, brought it up. He should be aware.
Calm app.
The calm app.
Yes.
Surely Big Steve Bruce has to be top of the list. How such a beautiful sound comes out of a head like Bruce has always baffled me. No offence to the man, but he looks like a 1930s boxer.
No offence to the man. I'll slag him off. Oh, but no offence.
By the way, we shouldn't mention the car map anymore because we don't mention brands that often unless they pay us.
Good point, yeah. I'd hit the car map.
I prefer Headspace.
Yeah. 5 minutes in, screams at you. Wake up! Yeah. Maybe that might just be the voice in my head. Yeah.
Yeah. Big Sam screaming at you.
Oh, Big Sam was in Great Nick. Was it last night or this morning?
Great Nick.
He said that I would never get the Arsenal job because of the way the media portray me.
Right.
Mm. So, yeah. Just asking the, just answer
correctly.
The just answer the questions he's been asked.
Yeah. I'm going to be apolitical on that point.
Yeah.
Ricky Fry. Hey, Ricky Fry. Good morrow, gents. What better way to celebrate Advent than be made aware that Graham, my kids don't call me dad, they call me medal winner, Wesley, has returned to the dugout and returned to Stevenage.
Excellent.
Merry Christmas and go F yourselves.
Good to know. Thanks for the update.
Yeah. And finally, for now, Jack Hobbs got in touch. Good afternoon, gents. As a group well-versed in footballing heartbreak, I thought I'd share some of my own with you. Having recently moved to Norway, I've been introduced to a passionate footballing culture and have been adopted into the Lillestrøm football club by my family-in-law. Mm. Unfortunately, their 45-year reign in the top division was ended this week in a two-leg relegation playoff at the hands of second-tier Start FC. After leading in the away leg, the Canaries went down 2-1, meaning a must-win game at home the following week. In front of 12,000 people, everything was looking rosy as Lillestrøm went 4-0 up after 61 minutes.
Oh, I saw this, yeah.
61 minutes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then disaster struck a Start striker, Martin Ramsland, scored a hat-trick in 6 minutes between the 76th and 82nd minute. Lillestrøm won the game 4-3 but lost on away goals and were relegated yep. on away goals. To make matters worse, it was centre-back and club legend Frode Kiep's 441st and last game. Every player needed a police escort home.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Not the early Christmas present we wanted, but hey, that's what football do to you.
Frode Kipper played for Liverpool, didn't he?
Yeah.
He didn't actually make an appearance, I don't think, but he was there for a while because I vaguely remember him being signed for them.
Oh, angry Frode Norwegian
Kipper.
Fans.
Frode Kipper.
That's Graham Westley's fourth spell, by the way.
Cool.
As Stevenage Borough boss.
Wait,
what about the situation in Norway?
I'll ask Lars about that next week.
Okay, fair enough.
But, I mean, I'm sad to hear it. It'll be 45 years in the top flight. It's almost like when Hamburg got relegated in Germany.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's take down their big Arabic clock.
Or when Everton get relegated this season.
Yeah.
Alongside Arsenal.
Hamburg's bigger.
Imagine if Chelsea,
clock.
Everton and Arsenal got relegated this season.
Lovely stuff.
Not on Big Dunk's watch.
No, it wouldn't happen.
Certainly not.
I'm going to get just a short. It's shortfootballonthedaily.com.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick Betway four to score update. It's still pretty hard.
Yeah.
No one got it this week. I think there was one person still in the hat and they had Mahrez as their final selection, which of course was put pay to after like a minute by Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah.
That was a weird one.
Who cares not for your money nor for your feelings.
No.
And we had Danny Ings, although he should have scored an absolute beauty. I thought he was very hard done by the referee. Sigurdsson, Pete, characteristically ruled out through illness and didn't play.
As soon as I choose a player, if any teams want to stick a couple of quid in my back pocket, I will choose the opposition player and they will instantly get ill.
I mean, do gamble responsibly. I had Dele, no. Marcus had Jesus, he should have scored, but that was also a no. So it rolls over to next week. Betway.com/4 to score to get involved. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
I think that might be the worst one we've had, isn't it? The best we can salvage from that is that Danny Ings had a shot.
No, it was a beauty, though. Darren Bent right on the top corner.
Darren Bent says it should have gone in.
Yeah. Darren Bent,
He'll claim it. He will claim it. Manchester United drew one all at home with Everton big Duncan Ferguson, giving it plenty on the touchline. You see, when it was a cold day, the rain was coming down, blazer off.
Yeah.
This thing's just going to weigh me down.
Out.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Everton, they played with that sort of commitment like they did the other week under Ferguson. This is the thing, what you want with an interim manager. I'd be surprised if he got the job full time because that kind of passion and the way he treated Moise Kean.
I think that's very long term.
That was very telling, wasn't it?
That was very much like, you're very much one of those managers.
Absolutely, yeah. But, you know, in the interim, when they need results, they need somebody to come in and just keep it going while they search for a long-term.
Hero inside themselves.
Yeah. Is there any long-term appointment in football these days? I don't know. But it's basics. He's playing 4-4-2, two backs of four. Everybody do your jobs, commitment, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And they've got a few points on the board since he's taken over. You know, you can't really argue too much in terms of the tactics with what Ferguson's doing because he's obviously limited. He's obviously not a number one. He would probably say that himself, or certainly at the moment. Who knows in the future? And that's it. Luke, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do the basics, do you?
Also, there's absolutely no pedigree or history at all for anyone named Ferguson doing a good job in the Premier League. So he's got that against him as well. I think I tend to agree with you guys. I think it gets you so far. I think you reset everyone's and Silva got a little bit. to me, he looked like he got a little bit confused as to what his best team was, never really know what he was doing. Someone comes in and resets. He's synonymous with the club. He's been there for a long time. He gets everyone at it, as we mentioned when they beat Chelsea. But, I mean, you know, in his defence, if you were here, he would probably say, well, hang on a minute, I've gone to Old Trafford and I've played Chelsea and I've got 4 points out of it, so let's just see how we go.
Do you need to defend Duncan Ferguson at any point?
But the thing is, he does come across as a really nice bloke. Yeah. Like, if you see him interviewed now, he's very friendly, very smiley.
Very wide mouth.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he would flip on you like that.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? He's the sort of person with people say, lovely, lovely man, lovely man, but but he can turn.
Yeah,
kind of like that famous prisoner, Charles Bronson. People always say, lovely guy. Lovely. He's not, though, is he? He's really not, is he?
Yeah. I mean, he's in jail for life, let's be fair.
But every time his sentence comes, is coming around, better put another few more years on it.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Don't ask.
Yeah. So you're saying Duncan Fergus has been completely institutionalised at Everton?
I mean, I think he had form before joining Everton, to be fair. I don't think we can blame Everton.
But I thought they showed, I mean, without being kind of proper football man, old-fashioned about it, he transposed what we saw at Arsenal across what we saw at Old Trafford. They had a lot of commitment. They worked really hard. Yeah. They were. I mean, Ferguson said himself, it was always going to be difficult for us to hold on, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because he's a man who very much operates in the kind of 90s.
Yes.
He still subscribes to that. United are always going to equalise against you.
Yeah.
And it came to pass.
Because
it's Fergie time, but it's my Fergie time. Yeah.
But the thing is, though, with Ferguson, it's, you know, all footballing cultures, there's usually, wherever you go in the world, there's something that you can take more from others, of course, but those good old British football values on which we tend to rely
him the job.
is it has something still for that commitment to organise a team and do the basic stuff. Like I say, it's very short term, but this is a short term thing.
But
he's pretty much saying that as well.
But do you not think the kind of way that he kind of conducts himself on the touchline, you know, kicking every ball and shouting at youngsters he didn't work with in the youth setup, it's kind of like he's sending a message to the boardroom going, this is how a manager should conduct his business.
That's how Diego Simeone does it.
True, yeah.
But that's how Duncan Ferguson conducts himself. And he's saying, right, under Silva, it was a bit soft. I mean, there was the odd thing that Silva, he didn't want shouting in the dressing room. That was one of the little quirks. Now, again, sometimes footballers do need a rocket. You hear players say that when a manager's a bit too soft and they come in and go, no, we needed shouting out.
I think the point is that these things aren't mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
I mean, Diego Simeone, clearly, he has done a brilliant job at Atletico Madrid and everyone knows that. But he is also hard. So you can do both. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of whether it's a little bit unfair and reductionist to accuse Ferguson of this, because he has been a coach for quite a long time and he might actually be quite good at it.
But I'm saying that his the way he's going to say something on the touchline and also rinsing Moise Kean, a young player.
No, we'll come to it, but that's a separate thing. We'll come to that in a moment.
Well, no, it's exactly that. He's basically saying to the boardroom, I wouldn't mind a crack at this, and this is how I conduct things. You've had the softy, now I'm going to be the punching.
He's not necessarily, he's not said, I want the job. He actually, in fact, after the Chelsea game, did he not even say, oh, no, I don't think so. They'll have to look longer term.
Yeah, but, I mean, obviously, you would want to...
Not necessarily. Because, as we said, if he takes the job...
But is there an element of this, Marcus, sorry to cut in, but is there an element of this that, like, because it's Duncan Ferguson, we're assuming that he is a certain type of character? Everything you throw at him, I mean, you could say the sub for a sub thing. When Mourinho did that with Eric Dyer a couple of weeks ago. Rodgers had done it as well. Yeah, so it does happen.
Yeah, it does happen, doesn't it? But I think you know you're creating a headline at least some degree
I think it's naive and Duncan Ferguson hasn't got the air miles that Jose Mourinho has.
I'm just saying, I'd like to see you say that when he's fucking here. Because you'd be saying, oh, please, Duncan, let me work for you.
I mean, like, no, I'll be on somebody else's backpack.
Yeah.
And he'll be able to fight for me.
Why is that backpack talking to me?
He'll be Duncan Ferguson's bum bag. But I think with the Moise Kean thing, that's piss poor from Ferguson. I really think that's very bad management. The way he didn't even look at him. And when he said, it was just, we had a lot of forwards on and we needed to waste a bit of time. No, he's seen something. Kean is probably, in Ferguson's eyes, this is what I'm guessing.
He did say he didn't have the pace of the game.
Exactly. There was a little comment there. Yeah. And I think that Ferguson, the way he reacted, my guess would be that he believes, again, this is pure guess, and whether he's right or wrong in my guess world, who knows? But I suspect that with Kean, perhaps he's not been putting the yards in training, something like that. And when he got on the pitch, Ferguson is wanting all hands to the pump.
Yeah.
We're at Old Trafford.
Players
aren't humiliated
enough these days.
and he feels that Kean is not putting a shift in or maybe doing what he's doing. That's what I suspect. And he's gone, right, I'll bloody show you.
He looked like a gorse. He didn't do anything in the game.
Yeah, and so I think...
And to be honest, I think if you... as a manager, you should know what state your player's in. And if he's going to go on the pitch, and he brought him on, so I, you know.
Well, I think, and it goes back to the point of it maybe being a bit too soft under Silva, and Ferguson's going, this is not good enough. He loves the club, blah, 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 blah. And he's gone, right, I'll make an example of you or something like that. That is what I strongly
suspect. He said, I can see why he's upset. I'll speak to him next time I see him. Tomorrow, probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
He's only 19 as well.
I know. I'm really sorry.
He's fresh. He's fresh at the country. He probably doesn't speak, you know, I don't know what his language skills are like. He's probably incredibly fucking lonely.
He's got no chance to understand Duncan Ferguson.
My
wife can't understand Duncan Ferguson. She's a native English speaker.
Well, this is probably a generational thing, though, isn't it? Where sort of when you know, Duncan Ferguson was raised in the world of football, you didn't have people, you know, calling you up and explaining decisions. You did get on with it and you did, you know, pick yourself up and just take whatever happened supposedly in your stride. Whereas now we're in an era where you don't necessarily do that so much. And if somebody does make a difficult decision on your behalf, you'd expect that to be explained. So perhaps it's just a sort of disconnect there, where Ferguson just, you know, thinks about it in a slightly different way, and that's what worked for him. So he's putting onto other players.
I think he's making an example of him. I think he's been very harsh, and he's done that. And I felt very sorry for Ken as he walked off.
Did you see the montage of Ferguson before the game when he scored a goal against Man United very early in his career?
Right.
Underrated, very handsome man.
He's got
a bit of the Ally McCoist about him.
Yeah, he does a bit. Yeah, you're right.
Sorry, carry on.
But what about in the match itself? Lindelof's was own goal by was checked by VAR, of course. I thought it was a foul on David De Gea. There's been a debate on this. I was surprised it wasn't overruled. And then people saying, oh, but look at, you know, other goalkeepers and other various examples. I thought it was a foul.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The new Fergie time.
I wouldn't have a huge disagreement with you over that, but I do think De Gea's got to blame himself for it. To have any debate at all is De Gea's fault, because he should have just cleaned that out. Mm. And there's no reason he shouldn't have dealt with that.
No,
better.
They're separate issues, though, surely.
No, he's fouled. He wasn't strong enough.
Well, I don't know. If he's fouled, though, right?
He saw it. He didn't react till very late on, and it meant he wasn't in the position he needed to be. And then he kind of had a coming together, which could have been construed as a foul. And I'm no problem saying that.
It's two players, wasn't it?
In another situation, De Gea deals with that. Was it Gary Neville who said it looked like it reminded him of David De Gea when he first came to England? And then he did that quite a lot. And then he kind of got used to the swing of things and got used to the pace and the strength of the game and became brilliant. And it felt a bit like a flashback to those times.
Yeah. I mean,
it's quite loopy, that, wasn't it? That cross.
Exactly.
Quite loopy.
A lot of loopy behaviour in the Premier League. Mason Greenwood came off the bench to get the equaliser. That's a bright spark for Manchester United fans in the young man. He's obviously highly rated. Indeed, Man United now 4 points off Chelsea in that fourth spot. Mm. They're still in contention.
You seem to have ascribed Chelsea the status as gatekeepers.
Yeah, I think
in that
I am.
Position. Yeah, we'll
whether they realise that or not, I don't know. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, before we move on, another decent performance from him. He is he seems to be revitalised under Ferguson.
But he's exactly the type of player to thrive under Ferguson, isn't he?
And maybe Ferguson with someone like Ken, you know, just very briefly going back to that, it's the type of forward that he's looking at him going, no, you should be like me. And
well, this is all a bit modern for my taste.
Yeah, exactly. And Calvert-Lewin is performing. So good stuff from Everton. Oh, before we move on to the Premier League, what about just a brief mention for Tottenham Hotspur? Proper bit of shithousery. Did you see them going in on Adama Traore?
Yeah.
Mourinho. There we go. I expect that from Eric Dyer. But when you see Harry Kane doing it.
when I'm putting in Spurs players into my fantasy team, because I think as soon as they hire Mourinho, they're going to keep a load of clean sheets. Yeah. I am annoyed. They don't seem to keep any. What's going on?
Probably to come, isn't it?
Have you seen how Adama Traore is built now, though?
Oh, yeah.
I would not be going
near
him.
The picture of him in 2012 on Twitter this week, it's a picture of him in 2012 and a picture of him today. He looks literally twice the man he was then.
It's funny, isn't it? Because that isn't necessarily the sort of physique you want, especially as a winger. You know, bulking yourself up, you perhaps lose a little bit of mobility, but it doesn't seem to matter to Traore.
It's a bit Watford forward club man, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's a bit Belgian blue.
Yeah, but I tell you what,
those mad cows.
Spurs have got the draw they wanted, it's presumably the Champions League, because they're up against RB Leipzig.
Yeah. Oh, has that been done?
It's been done, yeah.
We'll go for it in depth on Thursday, but read it through to us anyway.
Chelsea have got Bayern.
Okay.
Ooh, one for Lampard to get his tactical chops around.
Man City got Real Madrid.
They've got Real Madrid, which Pep Guardiola, going back to his old haunt.
Nice. Yeah.
And when I say haunt, obviously,
he's never managed them.
and Liverpool against Atletico.
Nice.
Oh, that's a nice one.
That is a nice one.
Four tasty ones in there.
Very tasty.
We'll go through that in depth, as along with the Europa League draw, of course, on the continent on Thursday.
Yes, of course we will. Let's go into the Championship then. Some good scores in the Championship. Cardiff City with a great comeback against Leeds. Neil Harris's side is scoring three sort of late goals. And the third one they scored when they were down to 10 men. Was it Sean Morrison who scored?
Yeah, that's an absolute sickener for Leeds. Because they were just flying through that game.
Mm. Bielsa was bemused about how his team
he seemed very confused.
Didn't win the match. Yeah, and it's funny because Patrick Bamford's obviously been scoring a lot of goals and you look at him and you just think, oh, come on, Patrick, I'd love to see you do this in the Premier League.
I think, you know, even at this level, though, he doesn't seem like the quickest, does he?
Mm. So but he's quite classy forward.
Yeah, but I mean, that does make a huge difference. If there's going to be one thing that is immediately different in the Premier League, it's that the pace of it is maybe not significantly faster, because I think the Championship is quicker than it's often given credit for, but it's marginal, isn't it? These marginal things make a huge difference when you make that step up in quality. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you completely. Maybe the Huckabee zone should be called the Bamford zone soon. We'll get into that point.
There is an argument there. I mean, Leeds obviously second, of course, behind Bilic's boys, West Brom, who won away to Birmingham.
That was a brilliant game.
Charlie Austin came up.
Yeah. Two brilliant goals.
That first one from Austin was just delightful.
The second one was great as well. A big header at the far post. Very nice. Yeah.
I mean, bustling. Almost Shearer-esque. Maybe not quite to the level, but you know, it's a reminder of what that kind of
player
was like.
There were two quite Alan Shearer-esque goals.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. But, I mean, West Brom, they've been brilliant this season. They played 22. They've only lost once. They've scored 45 goals as well. Mm. They're top, of course, with 49 points. Leeds second with 47. There's 10 points between second and third.
I look forward to Slaven Bilic losing his job as West Brom manager in January 2021.
Mm, yep.
With them rock bottom of the Premier League.
But I mean,
that's the spirit.
Leeds are in, for me, the perfect position there because they're not in top.
Yeah.
So a little bit more eyes on West Brom. Especially with that away kit, you can't take your eyes off it.
Well, you say that, but Leeds fans will be thinking, oh God, here we go again.
Well, I don't know, because they're
10 points clear of third, aren't they?
They're 10 points, but as I say, West Brom are top. Yeah. So just a little bit more. Obviously, Leeds fans will have their own anxieties about the situation, but I don't know, in the wider context. That West Brom away kit,
it reminds me of a sort of 90s packet of cheese and onion crisps.
The ripe banana.
The ripe. That's all I'm saying. A bunch of ripe bananas.
When I saw Charlie Austin wearing that with his bleached blonde hair, what am I looking at? Remember that character Brad from Neighbours?
Oh, yeah.
Looking at him.
He's a bit like that.
He looks like the bass is like NoFX or something.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He was also asked
what he's broken.
He was also asked what Charlie Austin, what the standard of the Championship was like compared to the Premier League.
It's a joke.
It's a joke.
No, sorry, I didn't realise you were going to go for that one. Sorry.
Come along.
Sorry.
Derby lost at home to Millwall. They're 16th and 9 points off the playoffs. But Wayne Rooney says he wants to get Derby back in the Prem and then play his part for the team back in the top flight.
I can't wait to see him wheezing all over the Championship in January.
A couple of red cards here and there.
Oh, big time. How many red cards do you reckon he'll get between now and May?
Two.
I reckon he'll get a couple, yeah. I reckon he'll get a couple for sure. It will be a kind of definite one to keep an eye on, because seeing Wayne Rooney play in the Championship will be a weird thing to see how good he still is.
Yes, I agree with you.
Because you get an element of some players when they get older, and I know he's not that old, but he's got a lot of miles on the clock. They get dragged into the standard, don't they? And some of them just look amazingly brilliant. And Derby have had a real problem scoring goals this season. Like, I think only two teams in the Championship have scored fewer goals than they have. And they're not right down there, but they're not doing great. And so he could make a real difference just for being Wayne Rooney. There'll be players there. They'll be patronising the Derby because they've got some big players, but there'll be some players there go, fucking hell, I'm playing with Wayne Rooney.
Well, that's, so they said that, didn't they, in training, you know, when he turned up, they were like, bloody hell, there's Wazza.
Yeah, I feel like he'll boss it in the Championship and it'll be glorious.
Mm. I'd like to think so.
We'll see. Well, we will see. So we'll see soon.
Indeed.
Did you guys see Alfredo Morelos?
Oh, yeah.
So good.
For a little while.
He's such an idiot.
So he got sent off five times last season.
Yeah.
And he hadn't been sent off yet this season. And he scored against...
Did he not apply,
I don't think so. No, I think he had.
Very late on for him.
And he scored against Motherwell on a booking. Did a ridiculous celebration. And they got a second yellow and got sent off. They won the game 2-0, was it? Yeah, I think they did. Gerrard's comments afterwards. Well, yeah, I mean, Steven Gerrard appeared to suggest that on one hand he had no complaints, but on the other hand the referee was just itching to send him off. Yeah. It's like, well, if you know that to be the case, talk to him and tell him to stop being a complete fucking idiot then.
I think that's ship sailed.
He was giving it the absolute, on the yellow, he's giving it an absolute sack.
He's such an intriguing player because he's decent, but he just seems to hate everything all the time.
I love it.
He doesn't hate Celtic enough to score against him.
Well, yeah, indeed, yeah. Absolutely.
He's knocking them in for my Newcastle side in Football Manager, so I have a bit of that.
Is he really?
He is indeed.
Pete's Wicked Whispers, heard it here first.
Yeah. could do worse after Dwight Gurrell at the weekend, to be fair.
Who else have you got in there?
I think he's my only signing, to be honest. I'm terrible at it. I just can't, Pardew-esque, can't arrest the slide. Fired by Christmas every single year. It's and then I just put it away, and then the next one comes out.
Oh, yeah.
I play it for a few days, and I'm like, I'm just bad at it.
Oh, Petey.
Give it up.
You think you've got a gaming chair. You think you'd be good at it.
I know. Sat there.
That is the most opulent use of a gaming chair, isn't it? Football Manager.
Football Manager, yeah. I've just bought an i9 processor for this.
There you go.
There we are.
Marcus Pete's talking about processors.
Yeah, get out of
here. I think we should hear him a little bit more, actually.
but the mic's off.
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to the Football Ramble. It's been a bloody pleasure. Jules and Andy will be back in your ears tomorrow. Luke Moore, thank you.
Cheers.
Pete Donaldson, thank you.
Bye.
Jim Campbell, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, listeners. Join me and Jonathan Wilson every Saturday on Football Ramble Daily for new episodes of Greatest Games in association with the Blizzard magazine. The Best of the Blizzard is available now. A perfect Christmas gift? I think so. 23 of our favourite pieces from the first 5 years of the Blizzard for you, friends and loved ones. Everything from Socrates and Scotland to St. Pauli and football smoking culture. Head to the shop now to buy the Best of the Blizzard at theblizzard.co.uk.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.